Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal, Season 15.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the finale of Season 15. I feel like I say this at the end of every season, but this season has flown by. And I genuinely believe that this season has provided us with some of the most thought-provoking experiences we've ever covered. But I would be lying to you all if I said I wasn't exceptionally excited to share with you Season 16. Because believe me, I know what experiences are to come next season, and I kind of wish there wasn't a season break. I'm not excited to share them with you. But of course, everyone needs to recharge their batteries, myself included, so therefore we're taking our standard two-show break and we'll be back with you for the debut episode of Season 16 on Friday, the 21st of June. Once more, that's Friday, the 21st of June for the debut episode of Season 16. Now, before we go into our finale for this season, I just want to say one thing about what you're about to listen to. And that is this. Although the submitter wished to remain anonymous, they did provide me with some contact details, stating I was free to contact these individuals to verify the experience. Now, normally I wouldn't do such a thing, but I did on this occasion, and that's why I've left this for our finale. Because interestingly, out of the three people, all members of the clergy. Now, interestingly, they all received the same email where I asked them about today's experience. I only had one response. However, the response itself was rather telling, even though it was only one line. And I quote literally from the email, it says, "Dear Kevin, I'm afraid I'm unable to go into any detail regarding previous house visits. Sincerely, Father," and obviously I won't disclose the name. But for me, I read that email and I hear that the house visit took place. Why else would you refer to it as a historical visit? I also checked out that particular parish's website, and indeed, the email address is completely valid, which, due to the validation I believe I've received, makes this one of the most interesting cases we've ever looked at. But, of course, before we get into today's season finale, we need to thank our wonderful team over at Patreon. By joining our Patreon team, not only will you receive early, ad-free access to all of our episodes, be it debuts, finales, or minisodes, but you can also gain complete access to the Patreon-only podcast, Dark Bites. Now, when I say complete access, I mean not only do you receive a brand new episode every week, even on the downtime between seasons, but you also get access to the entire back catalogue and we're talking close to 60 hours of Patreon-only content. But even with all of that, the best thing for me about Patreon is the community. We've built our wonderful community of like-minded paranormal enthusiasts over at Patreon. And we'd love to extend an exclusive invitation just for you. Simply head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. Just like the following wonderful new team members have. Sue Banks, Colton Garrett, Tiana Percy, Lewis Berry, Landon DiPaolo, Emma Durham, Calliope Starr, Jeremy Stempin, Karen Brett, Jade McDonald, Isaiah Ramirez, Shelby Coleman, Paddy Barco, Claire Johanna M, Lorna Munro, JD Goose, Benton Gaha, Darren Canning, Drake Alvarez, Hayden Ashley, Cole Bradfield, Lee Lane, and Sherry McCulloch. Sincerely, guys, thank you so much for supporting the show. It's because of you guys I'm able to do this. So I hope you enjoy all the early ad-free releases, including the upcoming debut of Season 16, the weekly editions of Dark Bites, and almost 60 hours worth of back catalogue for you to binge during the season break. And so if you'd like to join us on our team at Patreon, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. But right now, for the final time this season, lower the lights. Make yourself comfortable, and of course, leave your disbelief at the door, as we hear all about the darkness beneath. Hey there. I hope this email finds you well. I've been a huge fan of your show for ages, and after hearing so many brave people share their experiences, I finally gathered the courage to share mine. In truth, I went back and forth on submitting this email, but after hearing so many people discuss how it gave them a sense of closure, I figured I could do with that too. Honestly, I'm still pretty shaken up about it, and it's taken me a while to put it all into words. So I'm going to send this anonymously, because, well, I'm scared of what might happen if people knew it was me. I don't mean from the dead. I mean from the area I live. So obviously I've changed names of those involved and the area. However, every other part of what I write is 100% true. Kevin, I've attached the names of actual people involved, locations, and the name and contact details of the members of clergy mentioned. So if you do need any confirmation of my experience, I'm sure they'll oblige. This is the story of what happened to me and my daughter when we moved into Brimley Terrace. It's not something I ever thought I'd experience. And even now, I sometimes wonder if it was all just a horrible nightmare. But it wasn't. It was very real. And it left me forever changed. I'll start from the beginning, so you can understand more how everything unfolded. So, Brimley Terrace is where it all started. It's a row of old, working-class terraced houses in a small town in northern England. You know the type of place. Narrow streets everywhere. Everyone knows everyone's business. It's not much, but let's just say me and my daughter needed a new start, low-key, very quickly. And this is all I could afford. Our house was at the end of the terrace. You'd think all of the houses would look the same, but ours stood out a bit. You see, the brickwork on the front seemed new, at least from a few feet up. Like someone had done a bit of patchwork on it, or maybe couldn't be bothered to match the old brick. It was odd, but I didn't think much of it at the time. I just thought maybe there'd been some damage at some point. All of these houses were built in the late 1800s, back when the mills were the main employer of the town. The place has two bedrooms, just enough for me and my daughter. But it did need a lot of work. It had single glazed windows, damp patches, you name it. But I figured it was a fixer-upper, and cheap, and we'd make it our own over time. It had a basement too, but that basement was the worst. It was freezing down there, no matter the time of year. And there were bookcases all along one wall. The space itself just felt weirdly off. It even felt like it was wonky on the floor. Although I had many a time been on my hands and knees with the spirit level and can confirm it wasn't. I thought maybe I could turn it into a utility room, but it just gave me the creeps from day one. As I say though, it was cheap, which is why I took it. I was desperate for a new start, especially after everything that had happened in our lives, and this seemed like a good, safe place to begin. Little did I know, we were walking into an actual nightmare. Now, the history of Brimley Terrace is kind of as old as the town it sits in. Back then, built in the late 1800s, these houses were meant for the mill workers and their families. At that time, the mills were the heart of the town. Life would be tough, and there would be a close-knit community. So these houses have seen generations come and go, and the houses have generally been passed on to family down the years. Our house, though, it seemed to carry more than just wear and tear. The new brickwork a few feet up from the ground level always just looked odd. And whenever I'd take notice of it, it always gave me that weird chill down the spine feeling. Initially, I went round with a notebook, making a note of anything that needed doing or replacing. I remember I'd already reached the bottom of the first page of the notebook when I went down into the basement. I'd kind of forgotten how creepy the basement was as I walked down the stairs, writing, "The windows in the living room let in cold air." And as I reached the bottom, I smelt a strange, murky smell. Now, although I'd been down only a handful of times, I would have definitely noticed this smell. It was like if somebody who hadn't washed for a good few months walked past you, like a small breeze, but of a foul odour. I smelt a few times and noticed it was growing weaker, like somebody had walked past. But as the smell subsided, it was replaced by an ever-growing feeling of unease that I was being watched by someone in the corner, just by one of the bookcases. Now, although it was icy cold and did feel very creepy, it was also well lit. So it was a strange sensation to look at a very brightly lit corner and feel like somebody was watching you. I would understand more if it was a dimly lit basement or even in shadow, but this just wasn't the case. I cleared my throat and straightened my spine, like some effort to shake it all away, before slowly heading back up the basement stairs but never taking my eye off that corner. I may be getting ahead of myself, so let me jump back and tell you a bit about me and my daughter. My name's Sam, and I'm a single mum. Now, anyway. And it's just me and my daughter, Lucy. After what I'm only willing to describe as a very rough patch, and I do mean very rough, we needed a fresh start. And that's when we found the house at Brimley Terrace. And it seemed like a godsend. Cheap, a fixer-upper, and one place we could make our own little heaven. We moved in one chilly autumn day, and the wind was biting. I remember thinking, we're not going to be welcomed here, as I recall vividly the next two neighbours along, both twitching at their curtains, not coming out to say hello. But you can't account for all people. So I put the key in the door, and we went inside. Somehow the house was colder than outside. But I put that down to the fact it had been empty for so long, with clearly no heating on. Obviously, whilst I'm eyeing up the to-be-dones, Lucy, on the other hand, was excited, running from room to room and shouting out to me where she was going to put her toys, her books, and it brought a smile to my face to see her so happy, especially after what we'd been through. The first few days, we were just settling in, unpacking boxes, setting up furniture, and without jumping around too much, it was around this time I walked around with my notebook. Despite having very little furniture, we placed it in areas to make it look less sparse, and although the house wasn't big, that was still a rather large task. I'd be often out at the second-hand stores and bringing things back like throws or cushions, anything to make the house feel lived in. And it took around a week, but eventually it began to feel like a home. But it wasn't long before I started to notice things. And it began with small things. Creaks and groans. But the type you'd expect from a house as old as this. But then they became louder. More frequent. I'd still try to ignore it, telling myself it was just the house settling. It was when Lucy began to look concerned, when she would hear a noise. In fact, I specifically remember one evening watching TV, and a noise from upstairs was definitely not the house settling. Lucy turned sharply at me, and I smiled and said, "It's just the house, love." But as the words left my lips, I knew it wasn't the house. A few days later, and I'm still unpacking a few boxes in the living room, and I hear a faint whispering. I was in the living room and I thought it was maybe the wind coming through the single glazed windows. So I slowly creeped over to check. But all of the windows were closed tight, and there was no wind outside. Also, as I approached the window, I realized it wasn't that far. It seemed to have come from the middle of the air, like someone was talking, just out of earshot. It sent a cold shiver down my spine, but once again, I needed to shrug it off. We couldn't move again. I think kids can pick up on situations a lot more than we believe, and Lucy's perception of these weird events went from 0 to 100 almost overnight. She'd go to bed, and then she'd come downstairs around 10 o'clock at night and say there was knocking on her wall. Again, I'd pull out the old, "It's just the house settling, love." And she'd look at me and head back to bed. I think it was only the second time I regurgitated that sentence that her look was a scowl, as if to say, "Why don't you believe me? And why aren't you doing something about this?" Before spinning on her heels and stomping back to bed. When she would do this, I would mute the TV and intently listen to see if there was any more noises, before finally admitting defeat and going to bed myself. That particular night, I went to bed, I fluffed up my pillows, and I started my normal nighttime routine, taking off my jewellery, removing my... I stood perfectly frozen, not even breathing. I was terrified. At first I thought, well, maybe it was Lucy. And then it dawned on me. Lucy's room was to my right, but the wall to my left was the wall at the end of the terrace, meaning there wasn't even a neighbour on that side, just thin air. I recall in a split second thinking there are only two options. Somebody's up a ladder or floating on the other side of this wall and knocking, or they're in this room, knocking on that wall. Now, people, as I did, may believe it could have been a pipe, which is what I initially thought. So I slowly headed over to the wall and knocked on it myself. But these walls are old, they're thick. There's no pipework in there. I stood back and stared at the wall. I put my hand to my mouth and tried to figure out what had just happened. After about 2 minutes, I turned around and...
Christ, Lucy! You made me jump!
Lucy was stood there plucking at her teddy bear's ears with a face of fear. I sat on my bed and patted the side. She came and sat next to me. And she said to me that a sad lady was stood by her bed, staring at her. Now, despite what I just experienced, I still smiled for her sake. I ran my fingers through her hair and said it was maybe a bad dream.
Just your imagination, darling, I said.
I mean, kids do see things, right? And she's seen enough for a child already, so this would hardly be surprising, especially after a traumatic upbringing, fleeing in the middle of the night, and now being in new surroundings. So I walked her back to bed, shown her that there was no one in the room, and then suggested we both sleep with our doors open and the landing light on. She seemed okay with that, so we both went back to bed. But despite my smiles and reassurances, I was terrified. I lay awake in bed. I couldn't sleep. The house seemed to take on this eerie feeling, as stupid as that sounds. It was like it was alive, like it was watching us, even like it was breathing. I couldn't shake the sensation. The air grew heavy. The temperature lowered. I pulled my duvet up closer. I just didn't know what to do. I'm a very rational and logical person, and it was a terrifying feeling as I lay in that bed, knowing that this house was not only challenging, but destroying every piece of rationale and logic that I could come up with. And this is one of the reasons I wished to remain anonymous. People talk about this motherly instinct, about how you do anything to protect your young. And yes, I believed I had that. But my daughter has just told me there is a woman looking at her in bed. And truthfully, I believed her. Yet I was too scared to do anything about it. That mixture of crippling fear and guilt of failing to act, well, it's a terrifying combination, and one I thought we'd both just left behind. One of the very few things I've picked up on about the paranormal is something evil will go for your weaknesses. And by God, was this a weakness of mine. I was so proud of myself when I got the guts to take me and my daughter out of an abusive situation one night. That pride I felt, that feeling of a chance of a second life. I never thought I'd feel that horrible feeling again. But here it was, thanks to whatever was in this bloody house. Today's show is sponsored by Acorns. Now, I used to believe investment was only for people on Wall Street or people with finance degrees, people who used phrases like buy low, sell high, and other things I will never understand. But the one thing I do understand is the importance of letting your money and your future having a chance to grow. However, investments can seem daunting and most people don't know where to start. And for many people, including me, you believe you need a lot of money before you start investing. Plus, we all have busy lives and we don't have the time to go researching how you start investing. So we say I'll do it tomorrow or next week or next month, but we all know tomorrow never comes. But Acorns make it so easy to start saving and investing for your future. You don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. Acorns recommend an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals and then automatically invest your money for you. I
I've recently turned 45 and investment has never been on my radar, but people like Acorns are so clear and straightforward, they've not only put it on my radar, but took it off my plate. So head over to acorns.com/dark paranormal or download the Acorns app today and start saving and investing for your future today. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investment involves risk. Acorn Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. For important disclosures at acorns.com/dark paranormal.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
One afternoon, whilst I was out in the garden, our neighbour leaned over the fence for a chat. She was an elderly lady and said she'd lived at the terrace for decades. She seemed nice enough, and I thought it would be good to know someone in the area. During the conversation, she casually dropped in that my house had a troubled history. Apparently, the last tenant only stayed for 8 months, and before them, it had been empty for years. People said it was cursed or haunted. She laughed, but I don't believe that sort of thing. Then she went on to tell me about the break-ins. Sorry? What? Break-ins? Well, apparently, because she caught people on camera breaking into our house in the middle of the night. She even showed me the video on her phone. 4 figures in black hoodies going in through the back door. She called the police, but by the time they arrived, no one was there, and there was no sign of forced entry. The police did speak to her, and they took her footage, but they never returned to follow up. That's when I started to feel even more uneasy. It wasn't any more just about ghosts or spirits. The idea of real people breaking in was terrifying. I began double-checking all the locks, and I even kept a kitchen knife by my bed, just in case. Lucy's nightmares got worse. She would wake up screaming, saying that the sad lady was crying in her room. She began refusing to sleep in her own bed, instead curling up with me every night. And then, one morning as she climbed out of bed, I noticed small, round bruises on her arms and legs that she couldn't explain. I obviously asked how she got them, but she was as surprised as I. I was now beside myself with worry. Was she hurting herself in her sleep? Or was something more sinister at play? A school bully, maybe? Trying to start work on the house, my first job was those useless windows. The builders came round to replace the windows, and that's when they first noticed something odd. The new brickwork, well, it wasn't just cosmetic. They found scorch marks and soot in the cavity, suggesting there'd been a fire. They took me out front and said, from their opinion, it looked like the whole front of the house had been rebuilt. Well, this sent my mind racing. What had happened here? And why wasn't it in any of the paperwork when I bought the place? Each day the house felt more and more oppressive. The noises, the cold spots, the sense of being watched. It was all getting worse. I began to dread the nights, knowing sleep would bring more strange occurrences. But we couldn't afford to move again. We were genuinely stuck. And I had to think of a way to protect my daughter and make our home safe. But I didn't realize things were about to go from bad to much, much worse. One really bright, warm day, I was downstairs with a cup of tea watching TV, and out of nowhere, the temperature just dropped. It was like someone opened a window in the middle of winter. I even wrapped a blanket around myself and went to check the boiler, but everything was fine. There were no windows open, no drafts, but it was like a freezer in here. I wrapped myself in my blanket, sat back down and reached over for my cup of tea. I heard a noise, and when I looked to my right, the top bookshelf full of books had fallen to the floor. I froze, my cup halfway between the table and my mouth, staring at these books on the Spinning my head around, I noticed a small porcelain statue I'd bought from a charity shop had fallen from its shelf. Fear took over me, and I stood up and backed myself towards the window so I could look at the entire room. I sat on the windowsill and tried to compose myself. Okay. I guess maybe a heavy van went past. Yeah, it was probably vibrations from the street. As I fought to rationalize what had just taken place, I watched in disbelief as one of Lucy's toy cars moved from under the back window straight towards me. I stared at that car for about 0.3 of a second before charging out of the front door and standing in my garden, panting not out of exhaustion, but out of sheer panic. I clearly looked as crazy as I felt because our next door neighbour came out and stood in their garden to see if I was okay. "You okay, love? Come on, come round here, I'll make you a cup of tea." I think I was still so in shock and bewildered she could have led me anywhere. Thankfully, she took me into her nice warm living room, and 2 minutes later I had a steaming mug of tea in my hand. She asked me what had gone on, but I couldn't find the words. I just shook my head and sipped at my tea. Although she responded like I had said something, as only really friendly people do. She said, "I know, love, I know," and tapped my knee. Then she said, "There's more to that house than you might think, you know." Still drinking my tea, I just stared her in the face, clearly waiting for her to continue. She began revealing more about the previous tenants. Apparently, they were a young couple with a baby. And according to her, they left in such a hurry, they didn't even take all of their things. She said they looked terrified when she last saw them. Now, she had previously mentioned that people left in a hurry, and that the property had been empty before that, and of course had alluded to the place being either cursed or haunted, something I believe I laughed off at the time. But given what I just experienced, I asked if she knew anything specific about the house, and if so, demanded she told me. Her face changed, and she hesitated, glancing around as if to make sure no one else was listening. Then she leant in, and she told me about a fire that had happened years before. The story went along the lines that a woman and her child had died in the fire. They were trapped in the basement. She said they were trying to escape something, but no one knew for sure what had took place. My throat closed over thinking about Lucy's sad lady. The house had apparently been repaired and sold off cheap because of the tragedy. Hearing this sent a shiver down my spine. I thought about the new brickwork, what the builders had said about the scorch marks. It all started to make a horrible kind of sense. The cold, the whispers, the feeling of being watched. Clearly all connected to this horrible past. And the only other thing about the house you've already seen, she said, pulling out her phone and showing me once more the video of the people intruding. These hooded figures apparently never vandalized the place. They never stole anything, even though some items of the previous couple were still there. They were just kind of there. Probably kids just looking for somewhere to be, I said, sipping my tea. No, these were definitely adults. How could you tell? I said. I could just tell, she replied. I thanked her for the tea and tentatively made my way back home. I put on some music so I could clean up both the broken porcelain and the dropped books, and everything felt okay. But two things kept hitting me from our conversation. Firstly, if she thinks they were adults, why would they be convening in our house? And secondly, this woman and child who burnt in the fire, why did she say they were trying to get away from something, as opposed to the fire? Talking to the neighbour helped in a way, but it also made me think that everything was real and terrifying. I thought I wasn't imagining things. There is something seriously wrong with our house, and I don't know what to do. I made sure to keep Lucy close, never letting her out of my sight for long. And her nightmares were getting worse, and the bruises were getting bigger. I felt so helpless, like I was failing as a mother. I just wanted to protect her. But how do you fight something you can't see? Something that seems to be rooted in the bloody walls of your home. The back garden fence chat continued with my neighbour, but I was deteriorating mentally. And one day, I just snapped, and I told her everything that had gone on. She listened, she paused, and then began nodding rather deeply, and said I need to get someone in to look at the house. I said, who? And she said, maybe a priest or a psychic. I'd always been sceptical about all of that, but at this point, I was willing to try anything. I couldn't keep living like this, and I couldn't keep putting Lucy through this either. Something had to give, and soon, and it was more than likely going to be me. My sleep became erratic. I was having nightmares every night, the same nightmare. I'd be laying in bed, unable to move, and four hooded figures would be around me. They wouldn't say anything, they'd just stand there staring. And I'd wake up in a cold sweat, my heart pounding, and always at the same time, 4 a.m. on the dot. It became such a nightly ritual, I dreaded going to bed, and some occasions I didn't even bother. I'd pile myself up on caffeine and watch box set after box set, until Lucy woke for school. It was on one of those no-sleep mornings that Lucy walked past me to get her school bag, and I noticed yet another bruise. But this was like none other. It was on her left calf, and it was the size and shape of a human hand. I asked if she was hurting herself. She said no. I asked who'd done it. She said she doesn't know. I was so sleep-deprived, so mentally battered, that I shouted, "Who done it?" Lucy looked shocked. Mum, I don't know. And she walked out the front door for school. That night, I dragged myself to bed. And given I'd had no sleep in over 24 hours, I was out like a light. But the nightmare came again. This time, more vivid and more terrifying than before. In this dream, the four figures separated, and at the end of my bed was a woman engulfed in flames, screaming and holding out a child. I could feel her pain, her desperation, like it was my own baby. I jolted awake, gasping for breath, and the first thing I thought was Lucy. I ran into her room, and she wasn't there. Panic now set in. I started calling her name, Lucy! I started searching the house frantically. My heart nearly stopped when I saw the basement door open, and I heard her tiny feet shuffling down each step. I ran down those stairs as she reached the bottom step. I grabbed her. Lucy! I said until she woke up. She'd never slept walk before. Her eyes were wide with fear and confusion. And then she said she'd heard the sad lady calling her, telling her to come to the basement. Well, the basement was the last place I wanted to be. But here we were. I paused, trying to calm my breathing, glancing around. What the hell was drawing Lucy down here? As we stood there in the silence, again a wall of cold hit us. I could see my own breath. Then Lucy pointed to a bookcase along the far wall. Mummy, Mummy, it's behind there, she whispered. She walked over and pointed at one particular bookcase. For the first time, I noticed that, yet again, the brickwork behind that bookcase was different to the wall itself. I pulled the bookcase to one side, and I could see the top of a hidden metal door. It looked like an old coal chute, but it was mostly bricked up, except for the top bit. And when I say bricked up, there was no mortar or cement. These were loosely stacked bricks. I moved closer and picked one up, and the brick had a strange symbol scraped into it, a three-pronged spear. I picked up another. A triangle was carved into it. Another, a snake eating its own tail. The brick under that one either had the number 8 or the infinity symbol. And under that was a sign that I later found out was apparently for chaos magic. I felt a cold dread wash over me. It was like the house itself was trying to reveal its own secrets. But I wasn't sure I wanted to know. The more we uncovered, the worse things seemed to get. I dropped all of the bricks and decided there and then we did need help. I contacted our local priest, desperate for some kind of solution. And he came over to bless the house. But as soon as he stepped inside, he looked uneasy. He told me he knew the house. Apparently, the previous priest had told him he'd bless this house umpteen times. And he shrugged, as if to say, "So another one won't help." I smiled, but thought, "Great." I told him all about the basement, and I led him down there. I showed him the bricks. And he stared at them for a while, then knelt down and touched the metal door. He came back over and in a low voice said, "It's behind that door." "What is?" I said. "Whatever's playing tricks on you." He held out the brick with the snake on it. "Some idiots have called something out. They've panicked and tried to seal it away in there." I must have looked shocked, and he tried to comfort me by saying, "Well, listen, I'll bless this room anyway, and we'll see how we get on." "We'll see how we get on," I thought to myself. But what I actually done was nod and smile. Now, although I'm skeptical about most religions, I have seen a house blessing by a priest before, so I kind of knew what to expect. And it was like I expected. He pulled different items out of a leather bag. A purple sash, a small vial of what I guess is holy water, and a book too small for a Bible, but one I imagine just contains the normal house blessings. Lucy and I sat on the basement step, and he did turn around as if to say he wasn't expecting us to remain. but we chose to stay put. And he continued, mumbling prayers and dashing holy water over the door and the bricks. After about 15 to 20 minutes of this, he placed his items back in the bag and walked over slowly to me, looking at the floor as if deep in thought. He then smiled and looked at Lucy and said, "Why don't you go play upstairs, darling?" Taking the hint, I ushered Lucy back up the stairs, and I looked at the priest. He said whatever was in there was too strong for him alone, and he asked if he could bring in more help. I, of course, said okay. A few days later, three priests turn up, our priest being one of them. They were dressed identically, and in truth, they all looked like clones of each other. And they all carried the same brown leather bag. I, of course, invited them all in, sat them on the couch, and I'd done tea duties as Lucy went to play in the garden. One priest then asked, "And where are you going to be?" "Sorry," I replied. He shot a glance at our priest. Our priest rubbed his brow. Sorry. You can't be here, you or Lucy, whilst we work." I looked at them all with a tell-me-why face. The third priest, who hadn't yet spoken other than to tell me how he had his tea, cleared his throat and said, "Well, imagine, let's say, a lion, an angry lion is behind that door, and you've called us in to get rid of it." I nodded. "Okay, so, for argument's sake, let's say it gets past us and comes for you and your daughter." I nodded again, though this time I was terrified. "We'll go to the park," I said. The priest smiled. "Excellent, and we'll need about 3 hours. I nodded again, but looked out of the window and saw the rain-threatening clouds. But then I thought of this lion. "Lucy, get your coat," I shouted, and off the park we went. When we returned about 3.5 hours later, only two priests were there, and they were both fatigued. However, they both smiled and said they'd managed to bring peace back to the house. But they warned me I needed to have the bricks removed, and also suggested I sealed that metal door over. So I decided to have the entire back wall re-bricked and painted white. The basement, with the priest's work done and the small door now sealed, felt completely different. It now felt like an actual usable space. About 2 weeks later, my friend from over the fence told me that her neighbour had seen an ambulance at my home and asked if everything was okay. I shook my head. "Well, when was this?" She said it was 2 weeks Wednesday gone, which was the day the three priests were at our home. I shrugged, pretending I had no idea what she was talking about, and quickly changed the topic to the flowers she was holding. "They're very nice. Who are they for?" "Oh, you won't know them," she said. "They're for the priest of the neighbouring parish. He, well, no one's really sure, but he had a house call and managed to fall, and he's broke his arm in 3 places. "How awful," I said, remembering the 3 priests that arrived and the 2 that left. I made my excuses and came back into my home. And it did feel like a home. Since then, things have been much quieter. Lucy's nightmares seem to stop almost instantly. But the experience has left its mark on me. I still wake up at 4 a.m. However, I don't see anything. I just expect to. But the house does feel different now. A weight has been lifted, though I can't forget what we went through. I've sent you all of this, including the names and contact details, in the hope you believe what I'm telling you. And also in the hope it may help someone else out there. There is a way to fight back against these things, or at the very least, protect yourselves from them. Thank you for listening to my story, and I hope it brings some awareness to the hidden dangers that lie in the places that we sometimes seek refuge in. Many thanks, Anonymous. Well, thank you, Anonymous. Well, I know who you are, of course, but thank you so much for sending in this experience. It's one hell of a way to sign off season 15. And now it's time to take our two-show break, and we return again for our debut episode of season 16 on Friday, the 21st of June. And the only thing I'll say about season 16 is I genuinely don't believe I've been as excited to share a season with you than I have right now. Don't forget, if you'd like to be one of the first to hear that debut episode of season 16, and of course to receive Dark Bites episodes in between this season break, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. Before I go, I'd like to say a huge thank you to everyone who's joined us for season 15. I genuinely believe it's been one of our most intriguing yet, and I do believe things are only going to get weirder from here on out. So, before I go, always remember, whenever you're discussing the paranormal, try and leave some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll speak to you all on Friday, the 21st of June, for season 16 of The Dark Paranormal. And until then, thank you and take care.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.